Welcome to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman, helping you unpack the economic headlines and providing real money solutions.
Good Saturday morning. Here we are again with Mike Carter, Pirate Money Radio. We're talking about economics. Part of economics is how people react, what they spend, how they live, and the weather impacts that. It's getting a little hot out there, isn't it, Mike?
It is hot. So 95 week of about 95 weather that we just got off of, and it's I don't know what it looks like next week.
Well, here we are, first week of June, and we're enjoying the summer, but it can get very hot depending on where you live. In Texas, it always seems hot in June, July, and August. How are you feeling?
Good. I'm excited about the summer, but not quite sure it's going to get any hotter this summer than any other summer out
there.
We've
had a lot of rain in Texas.
We have, and we've needed that. It's good to have. It was a rough weather situation last year, drought-wise, but things are cyclical, and now we're getting lots of rain this year.
Now, wait a minute. Are you sure it's cyclical? I think maybe it's climate change. That's what they tell us. All these studies and United Nations and everybody says it's climate change. So what I think we should do this morning, Mike, is we'll have a debate between the green movement and then the people who say, no, this is just weather, the Weather Channel guys. How about that? The founder of the green movement is Patrick Moore, and we'll put him in one corner. We'll put in the other corner the founder of the Weather Channel, and we'll see, is it climate change or is it just the way the weather works? What do we know from the Greenpeace founder?
What do we know from the Greenpeace? It's probably not based on real narratives.
Yeah, that's what he said. You got it straight. You know, Greenpeace founder Patrick Moore says climate change based on false narratives. Patrick Moore, one of the founders of Greenpeace, said in an email obtained by Epoch Times that his reason for leaving Greenpeace were very clear. Greenpeace was hijacked by the far left. That's the bottom line of what he says. So, wait a minute. All right. So, the Green New Deal guy, the guy that you would think in the green movement, you say, well, he'll say it's climate change, but no, he didn't say that. What do we have on the other side? The founder of the Weather Channel, and I actually have a video. I was looking at the Auto Channel and rolled through. It's a long video, but let's just get the intro of that. Can you play the clip from the Weather Channel founder, John Coleman?
Hello, I'm John Coleman, founder of the Weather Channel, original weatherman on Good Morning America, and a TV meteorologist for 55 years. I love this blue marble, our home. But we're isolated out here in space, and we human beings have a big responsibility. The future of this planet is in our control. Over the last 30 years, we have been told over and over again that we are destroying the climate of this planet through our use of fossil fuels, by leaving our carbon footprints. Ugh. The CO2 is destroying the climate of this planet.
My trees.
We're told it is causing uncontrollable warming, and the results, we're told, is disaster looming in the very near future. Over and over again, we've been told how the ice will melt and the polar bears are going to die, how the coast will be flooded as the oceans rise, some islands totally wiped out, how powerful hurricanes
are
going to hit the
shore. All because we're walking on with carbon footprints.
How millions will die as heat waves sweep the planet, carrying disease that will kill millions more, and our crops will fail, and we, our civilization, will perish. All because we are using fossil fuels and leaving our carbon footprints.
This was 10 years ago
that
this was recorded.
By running our television sets and our cars and trucks and airplanes, burning our electric lights, running heating and air conditioning, computers and cell phones, that we are destroying the climate on planet Earth. And we say, our carbon footprints, are they really doing this? The carbon dioxide that comes out the exhaust of our automobiles and out of the smokestacks of our power plants. The entire global warming frenzy is based on that carbon dioxide increase from the burning of fossil fuels. And how could that be? Isn't CO2 a natural gas that we breathe out? Isn't CO2 a gas that plants need to grow? Hasn't CO2 always been in the atmosphere? Isn't it just a trace gas that is just a fraction of the atmospheric content? Yes to all of those questions.
Yes,
but that very
to all of those questions. The founder of the Weather Channel, one of the original weathermen on one of the major networks, is telling us that no, this is overblown, overstated. It is manipulated and hijacked for political purposes. That this CO2, you know, the amazing thing, that was 10 years ago that he made that. And John Coleman passed away in the year 2018 at the age of 83, and he was right. They told us 10 years ago when he made that, the world's going to end in 5 to 10 years, and it didn't, did it?
It didn't. And, you know, it's amazing that we have these thought leaders, the founders of both these organizations, who are saying, hey, this is based on not truth. And, you know, but, you know, we're Pirate Money Radio. Is this economic or climate? What's driving this thing?
Well, we're going to get to that, but it's a $100 trillion experiment to deal with something that is absolutely not verified, documented. In fact, the leading scientists that we've talked to, and we've had several of them, Cal Beisner, Mark Morano, David LaGates, on Economic War Room program, they've all said higher levels of carbon dioxide are not bad for the planet. The carbon dioxide has been much higher at periods of history. And so this is not a real threat. That's what they're saying. And you certainly shouldn't gamble your children and your children's children's future on the idea that you're going to blow $100 trillion on a project.
Well, I think that, if I remember right from some of those shows, they were even saying that the only reason they picked carbon dioxide was because that was something they could kind of measure. So they made that the evil thing they measured against.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just a tiny part of the so-called greenhouse gases.
$100 trillion.
$100 trillion to gamble. But what if there was a real weather threat, a genuine weather threat? Did you see the Northern Lights a couple of weeks ago?
It was cloudy that night. I looked up very briefly. I did see the eclipse, though. That was pretty fascinating.
The eclipse was a few weeks before that, but then the Northern Lights you could see as far south as Alabama. NASA told us about them. You go out and you'd see something you only normally see in Alaska or, you know, near the pole. What that was a massive solar storm.
Yeah, and I did hear some of the news that beware of potential solar flares, and that brought back flashbacks of other shows that we've talked about and how vulnerable the grid is out there from those types of things.
The electric grid could be hurt because it's a geomagnetic storm, and the magnetics can interfere with the transformers, the large-scale transformers that provide our electricity, so it's a very serious issue. So I'm going to read from Astronomy Magazine, astronomy.com, and here's an article that published May 10th, 2024. A solar storm the size of the Carrington event could knock out the backbone of the internet. We were very fortunate because that solar storm did not directly hit planet Earth, but it was big enough that you could see the Northern Lights. But let me read this. Every few centuries, the sun blasts Earth with a huge amount of high energy particles. If it were to happen today, it would wreak havoc on technology. Havoc on technology? Why? It'd be like the Carrington event on September 1st and 2nd, 1859. Telegraph systems around the world failed catastrophically. The operators of the telegraphs reported receiving electrical shocks, telegraph paper catching fire, and being able to operate equipment with batteries disconnected. During the evenings, the Aurora Borealis, which is the Northern Lights, could be seen as far south as Colombia. Typically, these lights are only visible at higher altitudes in northern Canada, Scandinavia, and Siberia. Bottom line is, they're warning us in Astronomy Magazine about a very real threat. Lloyd's of London has done an estimate that says we're overdue for such a Carrington event. They happen every couple of 150 to 200 years. We are more than 150 years since the last one, and we are less than 200 years. So we're right in that window where we could have a massive solar storm that could knock out the power grid that we're facing.
But again, we're up against that, what they call normalcy bias, right? Nobody's seen that. People tend to forget things, what, after 20 years or so and think, well, that's not possible.
Well, then how do they think that the oceans are going to rise? The oceans haven't risen to wipe out a city in hundreds of years. So bottom line is there's a political agenda to push one threat and ignore another. You know how much it would cost to fix the grid? I heard as little as $5 billion. You know how much it would cost to mitigate climate change? Guess?
Well, 100 trillion. I was going to say, I thought we covered that 100 trillion. So for we can fix, what'd you say, $5 million to protect the grid?
$5 billion.
Okay. Still billion, trillion. I'm trying to get my head around that inflation.
I haven't seen either one of them in person, but yeah. $5 billion is a lot closer to where we are. We spend billions on projects all the time. Mm-hmm. $5 billion is less than the money we've sent to Ukraine.
Much less.
And then yet, $100 trillion is more than we've ever spent. Our total debt is $35 trillion. All right, we're going to have to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about this debate in science and how do we mitigate against solar threats. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman.
And your guest host, Mike Carter. Mike, we're talking about the debate in science between the founder of the Green Movement and the founder of the Weather Channel. And, you know, they both ended on the same side. They said climate change is not a big deal. It's not a problem. And yet politicians and the United Nations and globalists want to use climate change as a means of transferring money from wealthy nations like the United States to poorer nations. In other words, it's global socialism.
It's part of that economic war we talk about in the economic war room.
It's part of the according to plan that we talked about in the according to plan book. Bottom line is it would cost close to $100 trillion to move to mitigate climate change. Much of that money would go to poorer countries and they come out of your pocket. And all fellow Americans and fellow Western Europeans and so forth. It's not something I think we should do. But the solar storm risk or an electromagnetic pulse risk, now that's real. And we can mitigate that for about $5 billion. If they truly were interested in saving lives, because if we lost our electric grid for an entire year, the estimates are that it could kill up to 90% of the population, which is more than any dire estimate of climate change. And it's more certain than climate change. There's no scientist on planet Earth that believes that a solar storm or electromagnetic pulse is an unreasonable risk, that is never going to happen. Oh, no, you're crazy. They all say, oh, yeah, no, it's a legitimate risk, something we will face. And if we do face it, we can mitigate the threat for as little as $5 billion. They don't want to save lives. What they want to do is transfer wealth and take control.
Yeah, what would they do with that $100 trillion in reality?
Well, it would transfer a lot of money to China. We're already doing that, right? And a lot of the equipment, the solar equipment, a lot of the batteries, a lot of those things are manufactured in China, and they're coming out of money out of the United States. And it's creating all of these weird conundrums. President Biden wants to mandate electric vehicles, and yet he wants to put 100 and 200% tariffs on Chinese electric vehicles so that consumers aren't able to buy those. Everywhere you look at this, it's complicated unnecessarily because climate change is not really the threat that we've been sold.
Yeah, yeah. And it typically ends up being a narrative against liberty, against economic liberty, against economics in general. You know, we talk all the time on the Economic War Room show about investments that can be made that protect liberty, security, and values out there. And it's not so much about a scarcity mentality as it does as new innovations, things that we can do to improve our country, things we can improve the world. And we work on those on a constant basis here.
Yeah, no, I'd like to talk about that. In fact, the book I wrote 10 years ago, titled Game Plan, that you helped me with, Mike, it talks about what our nation can do, what families can do, what individuals can do. And I want to get a game plan. And the reason that we talk game plan is because I can't tell you what the economic disaster will be when it comes. Will it be bank failures? Will it be a real estate bubble and crashing? Will it be an energy crisis? You know, all of those have happened in the last 40 years. What will it be? I don't know. However, I can tell you that you can prepare in advance a game plan. Just like a coach of a Super Bowl team has no idea what plays the opposition will run unless they're cheating, but they don't know what the plays the opposition will run, so they prepare a game plan. If this happens, then we'll do this. If this happens, then we'll do this. So our bottom line is we want to talk about how we can solve problems. Now, how do we fix an electromagnetic pulse? We actually covered that in the book Game Plan, where we said, here are the kind of things that you might want to store up and have just in case the grid goes down for a week or a month or a year. Here are the kind of things you can do about it. We don't want to create preppers. We want to have people prepared. Just like the Proverbs tells us, 22:3, a wise man sees trouble coming and prepares for it, but a fool goes blindly on and suffers the consequences.
Absolutely. And we hope that we never get to that catastrophic event where there was some type of major EMP where we hear that it could be up to several years before the grid got back. That's a catastrophic event. You talked about that a little bit earlier, 90% death rate. Hard to prepare for that unless you're proactive in fixing the technology, and we have solutions for that. But let's say it's something where it's a regional attack or something. You need to have something for 3 to 4 weeks. That's just wise to be prepared for those types of situations.
When we had that freeze in Texas a few years back, people who were prepared did well, but the grocery store shelves went empty. Hey, you may have questions. If you do have questions about any of this, you can send us your questions by email to afr@piratemoneyradio.com. That's afr@piratemoneyradio.com. We look forward to your questions and answering them on the air. But, you know, in this book, Gameplay, we talked about EMP, solar storm, cyber risk, debt, which we've talked about show a lot, $35 trillion federal debt, foreign attacks, economic warfare. And we've got a couple of conclusions in the book. You got those conclusions?
The conclusions? Well, let's see. I forgot the book here.
They're real risks, but we should not be fear-driven.
Yep.
And we should be aware, however, 40 years of investing experience is what I tried to bring to the book Game Plan. The second conclusion I want to tell you, did you see the stock market recently topped 40,000 on the Dow, the first time ever in history, all-time highs. Is that an all clear? Well, Jamie Dimon, the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, says, you know, before any crash, it felt great. Jamie Dimon isn't sold on the good news coming out of the U.S. economy, saying it may prove a precursor of recession. Now, that was a couple of months ago. Does he feel differently? Well, recently, Jamie Dimon says inflation is worse than people think, and the market is too optimistic about a soft landing. And that was May 16th. So Jamie Dimon is in the camp saying, hey, look, we don't have an all clear. Are we headed for disaster? What do you think? You've been listening and looking.
Well, we don't lead with fear, but certainly it makes sense to be prudent and look and say, okay, what are the geopolitical threats out there? What are we seeing that's really potential risk? And you know, I think, you know, we know that the stock market today is not the same stock market as it was 10, 15 years ago. And that puts us at potential risk. I mean, we have so many advisors out there that have been able to do business as usual for the last 40 years before we got to this pretty inflationary market. And what does that mean for a client today, or for someone like myself who's like, okay, what should I be doing with my money now? And we're going to talk those solutions, and that's what's been great about these last couple shows. We're going a little bit deeper into that, and while we don't give that specific financial advice, being able to have solid solutions that's going to help everybody be a little bit better prepared for what might be coming, you know, regardless of the scenario, because we don't know the exact direction.
We don't. And you know, the whole climate change scare, they said it's obvious, everybody agrees and all that. We don't know exactly what's going to happen. What I can tell you is the average empire lasts about 250 years. There's research that shows that. Empires tend to die when they debase their currency, print too much money, and so forth. That's the fall of Rome. That's where that came from. And we've got some serious problems and risks. We saw these risks 10 years ago. You look at Game Plan chapter, page 26, chapter 2, This Time is Different, starting in that, what do we see as the threat that's on page 26? The inflation threat. I wrote it 10 years ago, and yet are we through with inflation, or is it still a threat today, Mike?
It's still growing, and it keeps growing every month. So we're not seeing, despite what the media is saying out there, we're not seeing the taming of inflation yet.
No, it's not. And how about the next one that we've had? Welcome to debt hell. Debt hell. When you got $35 trillion in debt, that's pretty bad. That's
where
we are.
How much was it back then? 14?
It was probably 12 trillion, 12, something like that. Yeah. Maybe a third of where we are now, approximately. It was 10 trillion in 2008. So it might have been 14, 15 trillion in 2014 when I wrote this. I know it was 16 trillion, I think, in 2016 or 20. It just continues to grow.
Well, you've been pointing where it's going to land, and you keep being very accurate, unfortunately, and we're not seeing any more fiscal responsibility
here it is.
Today.
Here it is. As I write, the reported federal debt is $17 trillion. The debt held outside the U.S. government is $12 trillion. Wow. So other nations held $12 trillion out of our $17 trillion. So, you know, our debt has more than doubled since this book was written in 10 years ago. You know, if that were an investment you'd made, that'd be a pretty good investment. You doubled your money in 10 years. Well, our debt's doubled in 10 years, and that's pretty sad. Okay, so we're facing some of these other risks that are walked in here. The end of the dollar's reserve currency. We did a whole program on that, the risks of the dollar, and the answer is pirate money, people. As we've covered in the book, pirate money, piratemoneybook.com, where you can learn more. And it talks about currency wars, all of these, and a coming cyber economic attack and so forth. Those are all the risks that were laid out 10 years ago. I think that holds up. I think it continues to be timely.
It is timely, and unfortunately appears to be predictive in most of these cases. So we've moved 10 years down the road with not a whole lot of new solutions out there, but we're working those things now in the economic war, and have been working them. And it's exciting that we do have some solutions.
Yeah, and there's some solutions in chapter 12 of the book. If you've got a book, turn to page 219, 220. There's actually 8 steps a nation can undertake to improve their economy and help avoid these problems. I want to run through those really quickly because, by the way, this sounds like, I'm not trying to be political here, but it sounds like the Make America Great Again plan. Step one, we need to realize that there's a global war underway, and we've only recently realized China's an economic war with us. I mean, I've been shouting it from the rooftops, but only recently we've come to that. Step number two is take reasonable precautions and protect our financial system, our infrastructure. We're talking about that with solar storms. Why aren't we protecting our electric grid? Why are we spending all the time trying to mitigate climate change? I'll tell you why. People make money from climate change. Mm-hmm. And protecting the grid, there's just not that much money in it. Step number three, get money moving without printing new money. We've been printing a lot of money. We remember just last week we played the clip from the Federal Reserve.
Biden's top economic advisor trying to explain how we print money digitally and loan it, but we don't really do that.
So. Yeah, no, he had no clue. But then Ben Bernanke came on, and Jerome Powell came on, yeah. And Neel Kashkari came on from the Federal Reserve. Oh yeah, we print money, lots of it, as much as we need. We'll continue to print money. Well, that causes inflation, and we have a section in Chapter 12 telling you how the country can get money moving without printing. Step number five, reduce regulation.
Oh, yeah.
Trump did that. Biden has reversed course and rapidly added regulation.
Well, we did a whole show on that topic about how much the average American would make today if we had less regulation. And we would have taken care of poverty.
Oh, yeah. People, instead of $50,000 or $60,000, people would have something like $250,000. It's a huge deal. Step number six is get a workable tax code. It's so complicated. It's so hard to deal with. Step number seven is teach what America is all about. We got to return to patriotism. But the most important step is step number eight, return to our spiritual roots. Bottom line, we've got to restore biblical principles, and we've got to go back to loving our neighbor and caring for them and following the spiritual real roots of what this made this nation great.
Mm-hmm. And we know, you know, caring for your neighbor is about being prepared and help them understand some of these things. If you're listening to this radio station, you're hearing things that are helping to prepare and put you in a position to be in a good position no matter what happens out there.
Absolutely. And we love people. That's the point. That's the religious expression, is to love your neighbor and to love the Lord God Almighty. This is Pirate Money Radio. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about your game plan and how you can protect yourself in the future.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
We're in the hot of the summer. We're in the heat of an election season. We're going to have debates between two presidential candidates who've both been president. So that'll be unique. We haven't had that in my lifetime. I don't remember a debate between two candidates who have been president. That's kind of amazing, interesting opportunity for us. But they have different game plans themselves. I wrote a book, Game Plan. It's Kevin Freeman, and the title of the book is Game Plan. And the purpose of that is, what happens when the economy goes one direction or the other with all the money printing, with all the debt, with all the international threats and everything? We're going to go one of two directions if things go south.
You know, and Kevin, the title of that book, Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack, even that was prescient in terms of, if you look at what World Economic Forum and some of those people are talking about now, where they've been wargaming, what happens with a cyber economic attack that causes a run on the bank or inflation. Those are the types of topics we're seeing now. You were addressing this 10 years ago.
Yeah, well, they're now talking about the solution being central bank digital currency so they can keep everybody in their place and control everybody, which is frightening to liberty. But we have two candidates. They have different visions for the economy. You need to pick the one that you agree with. One of them is more individual liberty choice, and the other is more collectivist in choice. And that's going to really determine whether or not, if we go a wrong direction, whether or not we're going to go into hyperinflation or depression? And that's the big debate among economists now. If you print too much money and you go bankrupt, what happens? Do you have a hyperinflation or do you have a depression? Which do you think, Mike?
Well, it feels like we're in between those two right now, a little bit like stagflation now. But I'm leaning towards inflation until everything collapses, and then that sounds depressing.
It is depressing. The bottom line is that people talk about that. It's a big debate among economists. Are we going into hyperinflation or depression? That's why you have a game plan, because you don't know if the team you're playing in football this weekend is going to run or pass. And you've got to have a plan prepared in advance for either one of them, a personal game plan. And what I want to recommend here is everybody should have a financial advisor. Now, I'm not recommending an individual financial advisor, and I am just speaking biblical truth here, because Proverbs 15:22 says, without counsel, plans go awry, but in the multitude of counselors, they are established. Now, I'm not giving advice here. I've functioned as a financial advisor. I've done that for most of my career, but I don't know what your circumstances are. There's no way for me to tell you, oh, you should do this or that. And in fact, the regulations that we talked about that were a problem in the last segment, those regulations literally preclude me from giving advice, or else I'd be open to suit. But what I can give as a piece of advice is you ought to have a financial advisor. Either study up yourself and learn this and manage your portfolio wisely, or get someone who has studied it, has credentialed, and is prepared to help you. I don't have anyone specific I'm recommending. I'm just suggesting you ought to have a financial advisor. You need somebody to help you with your money. You know, there are three things you can do with your money. You can give it, spend it, or invest it. And here at Pirate Money Radio, we work to explain solutions that support all three areas in a way that promotes liberty, security, and values. Patriot Mobile, a mobile phone company, they support the Pirate Money Radio program. Patriot Mobile uses U.S. carriers like AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile, and they operate on both Apple and Android phones. More information about the Economic War Room and Patriot Mobile is available at piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. That's piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. So if you had an advisor, what's he going to put you in, Mike? Where do you put your money?
Where do you put your money in today's environment? Yeah. I don't know the answer where you put your money, but I know part of that's going to be in pirate money.
Yeah,
and pirate I know we got a whole chapter that's written in the book here on the gold rush. So even back then, you were leading the way.
That's right. In the book Game Plan, we talk about gold, and here's some reality of gold. I don't believe gold is an investment. Now, some people may disagree with me. I believe gold is money. Biblically, it's money. If you start to Genesis to Revelation, it doesn't say invest in gold. You invest money in something. Gold is money. It's not an investment. It doesn't produce anything. You can't get rents from it. It's a unit of account, means of exchange, and a store of value, which is the definition of money. And pirate money makes that modern. I wrote about gold here. In this book 10 years ago, I wrote about how building a Texas bullion depository, then adding a debit card to it so you could go out and buy a stick of gum or a new car with it. Bottom line.
Well, we got the first part done. I mean, the bullion depository is here. Texas is the only state that has that. And that's a great piece of a vault that we've got here that we can use for economic liberty for Texans or anybody across the United States, especially so we get this debit card, pirate money card attached to it.
Oh, yeah. Here it is what I wrote in the chapter. There is hope. Take reasonable precautions. I said another initiative at the state level that merits attention is the Texas Bullion Depository, proposed by Representative Giovanni Cubriglione with support from Governor Rick Perry and the approval of Jim Rickards, the author of Currency Wars. If the measure had passed, the state would have sold the $1 billion worth of physical gold that it held in New York and bought an equivalent amount to be stored in Texas. The depository would be open to anyone seeking physical protection for his gold, making Texas an economic leader in the event of a dollar catastrophe. There were even discussions, actually we were leading those discussions, about providing depositors with the equivalent of an ATM card, enabling them to exchange gold for goods with electronic record keeping down to small fractions of an ounce. With a Texas gold card, you could buy a pack of gum, a cup of coffee with gold, and never have to hold paper currency. Gold would be added to the seller's account or converted into dollars for exchange. As long as the dollar held up, there would be no need to move to such a system. But in the case of a dollar failure, wouldn't it be good to have a contingency plan ready to go? That was in our game plan 10 years ago, and now we're actually out there. We were just at the Texas convention educating people on Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution that allows Texans to make gold and silver legal tender.
Absolutely. And a lot of momentum happening there. We'll have more details even later on as those pieces start to progress. But I've been to that Texan Bullion Depository, and you know they've got a gate around it that you can drive a semi-truck through at 80 miles per hour. You're not going to get in it. They got all kinds of security. It's a very, very, very high security bullion depository backed by the state. There's a private-public partnership, but having that there was significant.
Man. And you were there. I got a picture of you holding a nice bar of gold. How much did that
weigh? Yeah, I really wanted that sales sample. It was a 27-pound bar of gold that was just sitting in a drawer. Somebody owned it. But what could they do with it? They got it sitting there safely in a drawer in the bullion depository. That 27-pound bar of gold at the time was $800,000. It's probably close to a million today.
Yeah, but if you had a debit card on that, like we talked about in the book Game Plan, you could go out and spend a fraction of that.
Yes.
You know, I saw that there's a Senator Menendez who found yes. gold, and I saw a cartoon where he walked into a coffee shop and he was trying to shave off a few flakes of his gold bar so he could buy his cup of coffee. Bottom line is, that's an answer we had in Game Plan. If we go to inflation, if the currency comes under attack, this is what we go to. And now we're watching it being implemented. How many states are looking at it now?
Yeah, we got up to 25 states looking at it. We planted a lot of seeds this last legislative session. And we're going to have more and more meetings going through the summer as we get prepared for the next session. Very excited about it. Because this is something that's not just an idea. This is a movement that we're seeing happening across America.
Yep.
People listening to this show, people that are from Economic War Room, people are getting the book. Treasurers are getting the book. Politicians, legislators are getting the book, and they're calling us up and saying, "How do we make this happen in our state?"
Who's My objecting to it?
We've got, you know, primarily the biggest objection that I've seen consistently has been local bankers associations.
Now, why are they opposed to this? Because they're watching the dollars in their vault, although they don't keep many of them. They fractionalize it and they only have a few of them. But the dollars in their vault are losing value. Why would they be opposed to this?
Finding the real objection is always the biggest challenge out there. But if I were to listen to what they're telling me, they're worried about the states becoming a bank. States aren't going to become a bank. This is simply a depository. They're not loaning money, they're not doing anything else other than holding people's gold and recognizing gold and silver as legal tender.
I would compare this not to what a bank functions as, but what the Federal Reserve functions as.
Exactly.
Because they print money and they make money out of paper or ones and zeros on a computer. This is actually making money out of gold and silver, which the Constitution allows. So yeah. I think the bankers need to wise up. They should read the book Pirate Money and come on board.
Well, if I could say one more thing on that, though. I mean, I think they do recognize the threat of CBDC, especially the local and regional banks.
Which CBDC?
Yes, the CBDC. They definitely see the threat of that. They don't
Central
want
Bank digital currency.
Central Bank digital currency. Those are the things we talked about previously where, you know, they will be able to control how you spend your money, what you do with it. But most importantly, if that rolls up to a central bank digital currency, it's going to be the six big banks controlling that. The local and regional banks are going to be pushed out of business. So smart bankers are looking at this, and we have them coming to us as well saying, I want to figure out how to incorporate this into my banking system to track new customers, to provide a hedge, put it into an app. And so we are seeing bankers getting behind this and wanting to get behind this in a big way.
Yeah, so that is all based on Chapter 5 of the book Game Plan, written over 10 years ago, which was gold and how gold is actually money. It's not an investment. Going on, what do you plan? Where do you put the money? And when you do make an investment, it covers in Chapter 6, it covers stocks. And it talks about how the stock market works and operates. It talks about how you should diversify in the stock market, the potential for high returns, but also risk, how you can share in profits, what happens in a financial crisis, what's the difference between passive and active investing, how you have impact, what are disaster economics, where stocks make sense, when they make sense. You know, the stock market recently at all-time highs, people wonder, is that a signal to get in? Is it a signal to get out? You know, that's again why we recommend that you have a game plan, but you need an advisor to formulate a game plan. Everyone should have a financial advisor.
I know we're coming close on the end of this segment, but disaster economics, that one caught my attention. What do you mean by disaster economics?
Well, if there's inflation, if there's depression, if there's any kind of financial disaster or even a natural disaster, all of them have different responses that you should do. So, you know, Merrill Lynch understands the U.S. economy is a potential risk. To offset the risk, they've recommended dumping gold in U.S. Treasury securities and looking at foreign assets. Well, that was Merrill Lynch's recommendation in 2014. Hmm. They looked at Singaporean bank bonds and sovereign debt. These are the things that you need an advisor for, because the average person has no idea where to turn or what to turn. Get a good financial advisor. You know, we've been training financial advisors at the NSIC Institute for a while. People that care about their clients, that don't just sell the same idea that the firm says, oh, well, just go out and sell this because that's what we make money on. But instead, they've been actually trying to work with clients, find out what their needs and wants are, and then looking at the circumstances around and creating and writing a very specific game plan.
The beautiful part about this book, as it's called Game Plan, is giving them information that will help them contract up front with those financial advisors to develop the game plan that's best for them. Because this is not a one-size simple approach that fits it for all.
Well, and neither is Pirate Money Radio. I mean, we talked about a lot of things on this program, ranging from national debt to electromagnetic pulse and all these things. Today, we're talking about getting a game plan in your life, finding a good financial advisor. When we come back, we're going to wrap up with the seven things your financial advisor should know.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
And I'm joined by my colleague, Mike Carter, and we were, right before the break, we were talking about seven things your financial advisor should know. That was a program we did on the economic war room. We produced a full economic battle plan, and to find our economic battle plans, you can visit piratemoneyradio.com/report, and then people will be able to look at what we said on seven things your financial advisor should know.
Yeah, that sounds like a great topic right there. If I'm looking for a financial advisor or meeting with one, or I have one, being able to just kind of walk through and ask them those questions. Do you understand these things?
Yeah, so it's helping to formulate the game plan. That's what we're talking about. And in the book Game Plan, we've already talked about gold. Is it an investment? No, I think it's money. We've talked about stocks and the stock market. There are other places you can put your money, like bonds. And we did a whole chapter on this, chapter 7. It's titled, What's a Bond Bubble? And it warns what happens if interest rates ever start to rise, how bonds work inversely to interest rates. Higher rates mean lower bond prices. Lower rates mean higher bond prices. And that's your financial advisor will know this, but you need to know it, because when interest rates go up, all of a sudden, if you've, let's say you've loaned money to somebody and they promise to pay you 2% return on that money, and then interest rates go to 10%, are you going to be happy with your loan?
Well, I think we've got some banks that are in that same situation, aren't they? They loaned out this money at low interest rates, and now they're kind of getting burned.
Yeah, so. No, that's what happened to Silicon Valley Bank, no question. Mm-hmm. And they bought government debt, which is incredibly safe. Mm-hmm. Treasury bond debt, it's incredibly safe. They don't default. They haven't defaulted. In fact, the economists say they can't default because they can print money and pay you back in that same currency. So Warren Buffett said they'll never default. But it doesn't mean you won't lose value if interest rates go higher. And that's explained in the chapter 7 on bonds. Then we have chapter 8, which talks about dollars and banks. What happens when you put your money in a bank? How safe is the bank? And how you can determine whether or not it's safe and whether or not interest rates impact the bank like they did Silicon Valley Bank. Can they be hacked? Things like that. So that was in the game plan book. Chapter 9, we talked about annuities, guaranteed investments. And guarantees are wonderful as long as the guarantor remains solvent and able to meet those needs. So if you've got an annuity, as long as your annuity company is still in business, you're in good shape because they've guaranteed to pay that. Should you buy an annuity? How much should you pay for it? What's the right kind of annuity? All those things covered in the book Game Plan. The kind of thing you could sit down with your financial advisor and you could say, hey, I need this. Help me get there and hear the truths from the book Game Plan.
Man, I read the book and helped with the marketing on that earlier on, but just talking about it today, it makes me just want to go back and reread it again.
So. You know, I'm really actually pretty pleased with it because it held up over a decade. It was written a decade ago, and I still find myself going back and referencing things in it. Chapter 10 is for more than just the average investor. Wealthy investors look at hedge funds, they look at private equity, they look at private debt and all of those out-of-the-box things. So how do you deal with those and alternative investments? All of those things are covered in the book Game Plan. And that's for someone that really has all of their basic needs covered. And then they're looking for alternatives. And then finally, we'll talk about tangible stuff. You know, tangible investments like industrial metals, raw materials, energy, collectibles like Beanie Babies. I didn't know this more than a decade ago, but I learned it, and it's a sad thing. Gold is treated as a collectible when it's taxed. Did you know that? It's not money. It's taxed.
Yeah. And because of, you know, what happens with it today, people buy it, they hide under their bed or store it somewhere and they never touch it again. I think maybe I can understand, or it's a coin. So it's something that's collectible. But
yeah.
They're not spending it.
They're not spending it. Well, last time people really hoarded gold, the federal government came along in 1933 and confiscated it. They said, we're confiscating gold because the people are hoarding it. Well, that's why we have pirate money. We're talking about of ways to avoid this major problem. So the three problems you've got are trust. Who do you trust to buy gold from and hold it as money? Where do you keep it? Taxes. If you have to pay a collectible capital gains tax on it, if it goes up in value relative to the dollar. The last one that I just mentioned was taking, if the government, federal government. But what happens if a state issues gold and silver coin as legal tender, makes it electronically transferable with a debit card? In that case, Mike, I think we're in agreement on this. What do you think is going to happen on those three T's?
Well, what do I think is going to happen on them
if
we get the legislation done?
Yeah.
We're going to take care of all three T's. So we might be able to call you. Was it Mr. T or something?
Who was
that guy out
there? Oh, don't mess with Mr. T, man.
We're going to fix that. And what I want people to understand, especially if they're just tuning in or hearing this for the first time, this is a real world solution. This is not conspiracy. This is not it's not a pipe dream. It's constitutional. The technology is there to move it forward today. Legislators are moving this forward right now in many states. And this is an idea that's a movement that's actually happening out there. And so we want to just encourage people to get up to speed on this, because this is part of that being prepared we talk about all the time, and making sure that you've got your rainy day fund and something set up where you're prepared for multiple scenarios.
You use the term prepared. We're not preppers. We're not suggesting you become preppers. I've got good friends that do that. They store up, you know, a year's supply of food and all that. I'm not saying you should or shouldn't do that. There are circumstances where you really wish you had if these bad things happen. But we are talking about being prepared. And in fact, the appendix of Game Plan is titled Preparing Your Family. And I want to cover that. This is a Christian radio station. We're both believers in Christ. I want to carry the main points that we had for preparing your family. There's seven of them. And I want to wrap up with those things. So turn to the appendix, Mike. Preparing Your Family, number one, I'll read it. It's order your priorities. Much of our nation's vulnerability is the result of misplaced priorities, even on the personal level. But Jesus instructed very clearly, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Matthew 6:33. Many of the most successful people I know put their priorities in that order. God first, then family, then business. Too many people put business first. All right, what's number two? How do you prepare your family?
Yeah, number two, know where your treasure is. Matthew 6:19-21.
Yeah. Jesus said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. When you consider this verse from Matthew in its full context, it becomes obvious that storing earthly riches to keep your heart set on earthly things will surely disappoint. But heavenly riches are permanent. All right, number three is count your blessings. I learned from the great John Templeton. I worked for him for 10 years. John Templeton would always tell us, count your blessings. He wrote in his book, Discovering the Laws of Life, with the counting your blessings can transform melancholy into cheerfulness, laughter and joy are expressions of praise and thanksgiving for life's glories. When I turn on the news, when I pick up a paper, when I open the internet, what I get is despair. And I'm like, everything's going wrong politically, and I see all these terrible things happening everywhere. But when I stop and I count my blessings, I realize that God's still on the throne. I have many reasons to be thankful for them. I'm owed nothing from this life. I don't deserve anything, but God is gracious enough to give me blessings, and I have blessings in my family. I have blessings in so many. I've eaten today. I have a roof over my head. So many things bless me, and Americans are forgetting those.
Interesting that John Templeton taught you that. You know, of all people, someone who is very wealthy, but even he tried to keep perspective and say, count your blessings. That's something we can all take with us and think about it that every day.
Well, you also gave me number four. You want to read that one, the first paragraph?
The giving is living?
Yeah.
Do I want to read? Hold on, I'm not on that page.
It's on page 241. It says, as his coining of the word thanks living suggests, John Templeton was struck by the relationship between giving and living. The words ultimately denote the same reality, he believed. Life's greatest investment, he declared, is the tithe, that is biblically enjoined return to the Lord of a tenth of your income. In other words, give out of your living. So he called it thanks living instead of thanksgiving. All right. If you found it, how about number five on page 242?
All right. Depend on your trust fund. Most people think of a trust fund as a store of money set aside for their use. But I think of Proverbs 3:5-6. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lead not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him and he shall direct thy paths.
That bottom line is, if we put our trust in government, it's going to fail us. If we put our trust in pirate money, it will fail us. If we put our trust in Mike Carter or Kevin Freeman or the economic war room, it will fail us. Bottom line, the place to put your trust is in the Lord Jesus Christ. And if you haven't put your trust in the Lord Jesus, that is something you should do to be prepared, not just for this life, but also the life to come. How about number six, Mike?
Well, I just like the top line theme of that, never give in. And that's where we're at. Too many people have put their head in the sands and they're just kind of giving up or waiting for the return of the Lord. We're supposed to occupy until the end. We don't give in and we move forward.
Yeah, this is quoting the great Winston Churchill. He spoke at the ancient Harrow School to speak to the students. Standing before them, he simply said, this is an entire speech, never give in, never give in, never, never, never. Never give up. Never give in. That's great advice because the Lord says, with him, all things are possible. We can always move forward when we're working with Jesus. Number seven, what is the only one thing that's necessary?
What is the one thing necessary? You said you got to come out of Luke here, but I don't know if I remember that from when I read it last time.
The final truth we share comes from the 10th chapter of the Gospel of Luke. Now, it came to pass as they went, when they entered a certain village, a certain woman named Martha received him into her house, Jesus. And she had a sister called Mary who also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. But Martha was cumbered about much serving and came to him and said, Lord, dost thou not care that my sister hath left me to serve alone? Bid her therefore that she help me. And Jesus answered and said unto her, Martha, Martha, thou art careful and troubled about many things, as we are today, but one thing is needful. One thing is necessary, and Mary hath chosen the good part which shall not be taken away from her. The one thing that was necessary. Spending time with Jesus. That's it. If you want to prepare your family, if you want those seven things that you should do to prepare your family, and Mr. Producer, Rich, can we put those also at piratemoneyradio.com/report? That's where you can get these seven basic truths to prepare your family. This is Pirate Money Radio. We've been talking about having a game plan. We wish you a wonderful coming week because Jesus Christ is Lord and he sits on the throne.